Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 737. We're recording it on November 7th. It happens to be a Thursday in 2024, and show about technology and ministry. I'm Martin Spriggs, and joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you. The sun's shining in Minnesota this morning.
So. Here, too. It's been a little dreary this week, but the sun has peaked out, and it's a nice, crisp fall day here, say 50s eventually this afternoon, which I can take a lot of with sun. Fall is one of my favorite times of year.
Yeah, it's definitely the countdown for Thanksgiving and Christmas time, that time of year where things just kind of accelerate towards the end of the year and all the festivities and things.
Yeah, so. We signed up for Thanksgiving at our house again, which is okay. You get the leftovers. You get the cleanup, but you get the leftovers and all the grandsons will be over. So it'd be nice.
Something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Very good.
Speaking of things to look forward to, the show today is going to be joined by Dr. James Karlofsky, professor at Martin Luther College, a longtime friend of your family's and friend of the show, I would dare to say. James has been kind of knee-deep in artificial intelligence and kind of crossed my radar. He was doing some presentations, has been doing some presentations about AI. He met with the MLC governing board, and he's been doing some conferences, and he's got some great material. So we wanted to kind of take advantage of his hard work. And I think there's a lot of appetite on our show and our listeners for AI, especially in education. So I think that's it's probably an appropriate topic for today.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing from James. He always brings his A game for sure.
He does. So, and after the interview, we'll play that here in just a second. Lots of different resources that we can share as well. Some cool stuff that want to have you have your hands on as well. So let's listen to our interview with James.
Joining us today on Wells Tech is MLC professor and Dr. James Karlofsky. So happy to have you, James.
Yeah, thank you, Sally, for the introduction. I'm privileged to be able to serve as a professor at Martin Luther College, primarily working with teachers in training, live here in New Ulm. Blessed to have 5 kids, and to kind of show my age now, we're getting to the point where some of them are about to graduate from both high school and from Martin Luther College. And wow. Like to kind of take the world of the Drapers a few years ago, like one of them heading into the SEM, another one that's also studying to be a pastor. My wife also, Katie Nickelbein, teaches some music and organ lessons here on campus. So just a full quiver and enjoying every phase of what we're able to do, the challenges and the joys that go along with it.
Yeah.
I remember catching up with Caleb in California last year, and he has quite an arm on him. He's a baseball player, the one headed to SEM, huh?
Yeah, so they did a college choir tour that went to California, and part of the tour, he's a baseball player here on campus. They have him throw T-shirts at you. I think you were at the California Lutheran concert, and see, they would try to call on the kid in the back corner of the gym and see whether or not my son could hit him with a laser right at that spot. And he kind of enjoyed being able to show a little bit of athletic stuff, but then also loves the singing. So a lot of our family gets to do a lot of music stuff as well.
That's awesome. Well, we are happy to have you joining us, and especially because you have a vested interest in artificial intelligence. It seems you've become very popular on campus as everyone's trying to figure this out at MLC as well as across the Synod. And you've done some work in that area and done some presentations. So we really just wanted to touch base with you. I know this interview won't come out until after an event that you're presenting for MLC Open Learning, where you're talking about AI specifically with teachers in mind. So hoping to hit on some of the things that were part of that presentation and just tap into what James thinks about AI.
Yeah, thank you, Sally. I guess as you've done in many of your podcasts the last year or two, it's hard to avoid this topic. It's everywhere in your inbox. You hear it in the business world. You hear it in the education world a lot. I've been privileged to do a lot of presentations, but mainly because I just see it as such a need for our synod, for our teachers, and for our college that we need somebody that just keeps studying it. And the more you learn, the more you realize you don't really know as much as you think you do. And AI is such a expansive thing that you know, there's the endless possibilities. I guess the way that I explain it to my students is it's like infinitely powerful, but infinitely dangerous in various ways when you're talking about some of the potentials as well as some of the challenges that it presents. Was it privileged to be able to do a open learning power hour recently where basically just talked about a lot of the positives of how to make your life as a teacher a lot more efficient, a lot of the tools that are available. There's I think for a lot of our teachers and pastors and other Wells members out there that are listening, it's almost daunting that there's just so many possibilities. And I think in a lot of presentations, it's really difficult to streamline, like, of the thousands of possibilities of tools and the thousands of things that they can do, what should I be using? And I would kind of put it this way. I think a lot of our teachers and our pastors and other people almost need to forgive themselves that even though they didn't do things in the absolute best possible way, it's okay. So I think one of the challenges I'm seeing with this world of AI is this idea that if I would have used the tool better, I could have had a more engaging lesson. I could have had a better presentation. I could have written a better letter, whatever it might be. And this idea that there's this tool out here that can almost always one-up itself even is something that our students have a really hard time with. If I'm talking about my MLC hat, we even have to just tell our students sometimes when you're teaching, you have to be okay with the idea that there probably would have been a better way, but organically you did the best that you can. I guess I would kind of throw a couple questions that I'd like the listeners to think about. And I'm one of those that really likes to throw questions and then study it a little bit with the faculty or students. And one of those is whether or not you think AI is one of the biggest disruptors of our generation. And whether or not you see this as more of a pro or as a con. So, in the education cycle, this idea of AI in education, it really makes teachers stop in their tracks of, am I doing the things the way I should be doing? What is AI going to do to my lessons or the student responses? When I asked this question to our faculty and to the governing board recently, do you think AI is this biggest disruptor? They said, it's a disruptor, but they saw their phone as the biggest disruptor, that it's already sapped our attention span to under 5 seconds, research would say. It's made us so that we are discontent with things because we have basically curated devices that meet exactly what we want in the moment. Like instant gratification has gone to the next level. And whether it's because of the phone or now AI embedded into the phone, our faculty really debates the pros and the cons or that disruptor question.
James, let me ask you, you've talked to a lot of people about AI. Question that comes to my mind is what is the vibe kind of down deep in the soul of a, let's say, an MLC professor or an educator in a classroom across our Synod? Is their approach to AI one of apprehension, one of anticipation, somewhere in between? What are you getting a sense of for like right now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Martin. I would say it's a mixed bag. I could probably take our faculty here on campus and Some of them are very, very apprehensive. This idea that it can mess with the writing process in higher education has a lot of implications. So the writing, some of the writing professors and those that have assignments that if they weren't changed could be quite easily AI'd, if that's a verb, are very worried. And they all, like we have those debates of like, it, does this mean we should go back to the world of a lot more pencil and paper inside of the classroom? I would say the biggest, and then to finish the question that you asked, we definitely have those that are excited. I think the potential in ministry when you are a pastor, teacher, staff minister, or as a lay leader, that's exciting to most people in general. The idea of blowing up education and the fact that plagiarism or cheating feels like it's really easy makes people apprehensive. I would say for our faculty, the big debate where I was getting at it with it would be like deep down at the core, do you think AI makes you more or less creative? Because one side of the debate would be if AI is doing the thinking for you, kind of like the movie Wall-E, then we are no longer aware of what we should be doing and we're not very smart.
To doing the thinking for you, or is it getting you thinking? Right? Two sides, same coin.
Absolutely. Like I would have never thought about that question or that prompt or that meeting or that to-do list in the way that AI told me to do it. So the answer is yes, no,
Both
yeah.
and.
Or even just the question of does AI make you think more or less? I think for many that haven't dabbled with it, it feels like the answer would be the computers or AI makes you think less. But I think both of you, both Sally and Martin, could think from the things that you've dabbled with it, it definitely isn't always making us think less. When we have these debates on campus or when I'm talking to different groups, I'm definitely not going in there like I'm the AI cheerleader, which sometimes it comes off as like, oh, we want James to come in and we're just going to say the positives. I think I have to also be looking at it isn't just sunshine and roses, that I have to really think about what I'm doing with my students, or I have to be thinking about, are they still thinking in the way that I want, or am I just getting kind of lazy and apathetic, apathetic with it in a way that they're taking the easy route out?
I think in answer to your agree-disagree question, very interesting and a good way to start, I think, get people thinking about it in the right ways. Is it a disruptor? I would say a year ago, year and a half ago, when AI was equal ChatGPT, generative AI, I would say people felt it was less a disruptor. But now, when you see these very specific useful tools being crafted out of AI, specifically in the education space, it becomes very easy, I think, for an educator to see use cases rather than, well, how am I going to use this, or how are my students going to use this? Because some of these tools, a very thoughtful approach to the useful use of AI, and just time savers, productivity creators, just all kinds of very, in my mind, positive use cases that come out of these very specific tools. And there's hundreds of them, and they're coming out all the time. Is that kind of the way you're thinking about it too?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think that the timetable could probably be debatable depending on when people first saw certain tools or other things like that, but I think you're hitting the nail on the head. I think the challenge that we don't know is going to be who's going to win the AI wars for a lot of those tools that you're talking about. Like for example, Martin, you talk about, productivity a lot of times on this podcast and using a tool like Trello. Well, Trello has got a really beefed up AI look that I think could be used for good for getting teams of workers getting things done with it, but they're also battling with other tools just like regular ChatGPT or Magic School that can kind of do the Trello like things, and it's are the big box tools going to knock out the small ones that, for example, might be able to do AI video, AI transcripting, podcast, like all the things that I know you guys have talked about on your podcast for the last year or two. Can the niche tools do better than what these very broad tools could do that could be prompted to do it in its own, in their own way?
Yeah, and then if we are talking still about kind of that productivity paradigm, the danger is you jump around from tool to tool to tool to tool, and you never kind of settle into a tool that you make work and fits you what you want to do. There's so many choices, and you're kind of lost, wondering, what should be in my toolbox, right? And who's going to be the Google, and maybe it is Google, in this AI race, and or Microsoft or Apple or whoever.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I talked about in the Power Hour, but even just with our faculty, is I think it's important for people to dream about the possibilities in a way that feels realistic. So, I think on the, in the education side, which is my world most of the time, there's probably five things that are the low-hanging fruit or the carrot that draws them in. And if you don't mind, I'm like, one of them is this possibility that I can personalize learning for every one of my students, and AI is doing it in ways that just were like unimaginable before. So to go a little bit deeper into this, and doing a lot of teachers' conferences and stuff like that, teachers are hurting in some ways, not because they don't know how to teach, but it feels like I have 20 students that have their own needs with a limited amount of attention span. And how do I meet these wide range of abilities? I don't know, Martin, if your wife ever comes home and talks about that from her world of teaching, but just it feels like kids are changing and that I can never meet all of their needs. Well, for some teachers, the ability of AI at some point, it's getting there, that it could meet all of my students' needs at the same time in different ways, but I still have a role as a guide on the side. I think is for some teachers, like, oof, I might be able to take a deep breath, get my head above water, and go back to serving the way that I know I can do it faithfully.
Yeah, that was a point made, I think, in the AI classroom as one of the showstoppers, or not showstoppers, but game changers, of AI, just that ability to personalize the learning experience and certainly be a super aid, to any classroom teacher who wants to make it so.
Yeah, one of the tools that one of the books I looked at was Sal Khan, the Khan Academy person. He did one called Brave New Worlds, How AI Revolutionized Education and Why That's a Good Thing. The thing that's very interesting, if you kind of think about Khan Academy the last 10, 15 years, is the goal was offline learning. I mean, offshored learning. It's not always in the classroom where I can dive deeper into a topic. And he kind of doubled down on his AI tutor. He calls it Khanmigo, this idea that I can take and just talk to a teacher like it's in real time, but fine-tuned in a way that you're not just giving away answers. So if I'm talking about those personalized experiences, this idea that AI can help me, for example, with my sixth grade math homework or my high school biology assignment, but it's trained in a way that it knows to not just say the answer is 12 or the third paragraph should really be this one thing. I think we aren't there yet in a lot of the free tools that would be on in Wells classrooms and stuff like that. But I think he's getting at something that it's at the precipice, it's getting close, that there's tools where you're seeing it. The better the tool, it still seems like you have to pay for it. But I think he's on to something that I think would be really powerful and not really replacing a teacher.
So if I can jump in, maybe taking the discussion just a little bit of a different angle. Have you discussed with your groups the psychological impact, the making friends with an AI or counseling with an AI, and where negative things can be introduced in those relationships and that kind of thing?
Yeah, we We haven't really done it in a full faculty discussion or at teachers' conferences. It definitely comes up. It feels like I'm dropping books like I read 1,000 books a year. I really don't, but my Spotify can do that quite easily, and I love to jog in the morning. But there's a book that just came out about screen time and anxiety that's really kind of blowing up. The title doesn't come to my mind. I could look it up if somebody asks a different question in just a minute. But what it's really getting at is this connection between artificial intelligence or even just technology and how it's kind of messing the wiring of our brain. This idea of, we're in a phone generation, and it affects basically the generation of about 20-year-olds and younger more than 40-year-olds or older, the people that are talking here. And we've experienced Thanksgivings without phones. We've experienced, football games without fantasy football live updates at the same time. We've experienced teaching without distractions or learning without distractions. So we kind of can see both worlds, but this next generation is very anxious. It's an anxious generation, and some of it definitely seems like it's pointing to this world of either screens, or I can get the instant gratification or the feedback that I want from somebody that I don't even have to take much risk with. So to kind of answer your question more directly, Sally, I think the challenge that we've talked about a little bit is just we're seeing social networking changing. And it's not all for the worst, but definitely loneliness and people that would like counseling and other stuff is on the rise everywhere. And it does seem like it would be more than just a coincidence that either AI or technology plays a small or big part of that.
Yeah. So.
We're going to have to let you go in a minute here, James, but I wanted to touch on, these power hour topics that you shared with us. And one of them, it's very interesting. You said teachers should connect with one of the carrots of AI. And I'm assuming that that is kind of your advice for how a teacher or an educator gets kind of into the AI space. You want to talk to maybe what some of those carrots are?
Yeah, thank you. So I think another one for teachers is just they're very busy, and improving their own teacher efficiency is very important. So one of the things that I talked about quite a bit in the Power Hour is the idea that AI can just generate things very rapidly. So things like worksheets, rubrics, quizzes, emails, group work activities, surveys, or even AI-resistant assignments. It can rewrite text, generate images that you want, like for example, a Christlight image. It can generate math word story problems, other stuff like that. I think for most teachers, the biggest carrot is probably being more efficient with their time. If I were to do smaller or tangential carrots, another thing that we talked about is this idea that I can use AI to come up with other forms of assessment that maybe weren't on my radar or in my curriculum or in my documents or whatever it might be. And then I think the final one that intrigues me and a lot of teachers but isn't finalized is this idea that AI has the carrot or the possibility to do a lot of the assessing or the grading for me. But to do it in more ways, then I don't just have to have a Scantronable assignment or multiple choice. I can use smart intelligence to give me some real-time feedback. Now, one of the challenges with that is doing it in a way that doesn't break privacy or other things like that. If I'm dumping students' names or students' works into it, but even not just giving feedback, but also predicting or telling me these are the things that would be good for you to do next as a teacher move inside of your classroom.
Interesting.
Interesting. Well, we'll look forward to more of your research, James. Sounds like it's not a topic that's going away anytime soon. And perhaps we'll be able to have you back on the podcast and share some new ideas as things grow and change with AI.
Yeah, thank you so
Awesome.
much. And thank you, Sally and Martin, for all that you do for our Synod and through this podcast. It reaches a lot of people. And I don't know if you always hear it directly, but for me, being able to work the circuit around, I hear all the time just how the resources and the work that you do is such a blessing to so many.
Well,
Thank
that's
you for
very
that.
kind.
Appreciate
Thank
that.
you.
Blessings on your work there as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. James, and your time that you're putting in this, I think, very important topic. I mean, we've felt that for a little while, and we've devoted some shows to AI, and we're going to have a whole summit here in February where we're going to figure out its place and purpose in Wells Ministry scenarios and situations. But kind of whetted our appetite, and we're thankful that people are spending the time examining some of these tools, kicking the tires, trying to figure out where they fit. And James has done a nice job with that.
Yeah, I want to point out that James's open learning webinar was held this past Monday. It was titled The AI Power Hour: Boost Your Productivity with Creative Tools. And if you weren't able to tune in, or if you just want to rewatch or whatever, they do have resources posted on the MLC site. So far, James's slide deck is up, so you can grab that, perhaps share it with your own faculty if you want to make use of that in that way. And then soon they will have a recording coming and clock hour certificate availability. So stay tuned to that page for the resources around James's presentation this week.
He does a nice job, I think, of breaking it down and being very practical about its use. I mean, you can go a lot of different directions with AI and spend a lot of time and go down a lot of different rabbit holes, but where is it going to provide the most value? In the area of productivity or the next frontier. So we talked a little bit on the in the interview. Is how do we train or get our students comfortable with it and using it appropriately as they, continue their educational careers or go out into the workforce?
Yeah, definitely some challenges around that, and pluses and minuses on every side. But it is the reality of today that it is available, and students aren't gonna ignore that fact. So
Right.
I think it's good
And
that
James
we.
made a good point that this is a disruptor, and some would argue maybe even the biggest one in this technological age. We just not quite sure where it goes, and it seems one of the biggest challenges is moving so fast. It seems like just yesterday we heard about ChatGPT. Now there's so many variations and so many very specific tools using the technology, not just ChatGPT, but other language models that are making a difference in how people work and almost demanding it.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, making a difference in how you and I work, Martin, and the things that we can up our game with by just, asking a few questions or having the right prompts.
Right.
So.
That's the new kind of killer must-have skill set. All right. So thanks again to Dr. James Karlosky for joining us, and blessings on your continuing ministry there up on the hill at Martin Luther College. Let's move on, Sally, to ministry resources.
And it is the season of Thanksgiving, just like
It
we talked
is.
about at the beginning of the show. So we wanted to point to a resource available from Northwestern Publishing House, written by Pastor Andrew Scherer. And it's called 364 Days of Thanksgiving. We celebrate Thanksgiving annually, but this is about being thankful all year long. And there's Bible study material. I think there's a book that's published as well, but gives you kind of some perspective on overwhelming gratitude and generosity and faithfulness and in response to the gratitude that we have. So a wonderful opportunity to up the Thanksgiving level in your congregation or small group Bible study, whatever it may be, with these resources.
Yeah, this is a either a downloadable or CD product for those of you that prefer the little discs that have data on them. But this comes with sermons. It's got a Bible study, adult Bible study, just something to consider as you're figuring out how to bring Thanksgiving into your congregation or school's ministry. So good. And we also wanted to provide a Google Doc that Dr. Karlofsky put together about AI and productivity. As we mentioned, it is a fast-moving and sometimes very complicated space to know when to use what and where AI is useful, where it's not. And he's done a nice job at putting together some, just from a productivity perspective, areas where AI might be helpful to you. So he breaks it down by writing and content creation, task and project management, email and communication management, meeting and scheduling, time management and focus, personal and workflow automation, data analysis, one of your favorites, Sally, customer relationship management, virtual assistants, document management, and automation. So it seems like everywhere you look, some of the tools, the mainstream tools that play in those spaces are adopting AI into their product, or there are kind of third-party AI, either plugins or standalone applications that play nicely in that space. So we'll make that available as well. So it's a good resource. If nothing else, kind of gets you thinking about the different areas that AI is maybe going to be useful for you in the productivity space.
And just credit where credit's due, this one's done by almost Dr. Rachel Feld, who's very close with her dissertation. She and James and several others worked together over the summer and did readings and things like that on AI. So I think it was Rachel, and this was actually generated from an AI prompt of all things. She asked the AI what were the best tools. And in the list, it's kind of funny, under meeting and scheduling, this was a ChatGPT lie, because the tool that it pointed out didn't do that thing. So you see the good and the bad.
Yep.
With those AI prompts.
Right. Yep. Buyer beware. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week.
And mine has to do with AI, believe it or not. Just this morning, I was reading something and I came across a link to something called Prompt Base. And I had to check that out. I'm not saying this is something I've used or that I recommend necessarily, but something I found very interesting in the whole AI landscape. So kind of file it under broaden your AI vision, because as we've talked about already just in this show, Martin, prompts are kind of where it's at. It's the it's the sweet spot of being able to get what you want out of the AI tools. And this company apparently started back in about 2022 to put together a database of prompts that they sell. It's kind of like an Etsy marketplace, but for prompts for different AI generators. And so you can come here looking for a particular art style and get prompts for doing that type of graphic or whatever. It's kind of all over the place. I think their tagline says they have 150,000 plus curated AI prompts made by expert AI creators, whoever those people are. That's a job I didn't know existed, AI creators. They produce better outputs. They save you time. They save you cost, because some of these processes can be fee-based, and you have to kind of refine your prompts and things. It's not like you get the best thing out of it when you're doing it yourself the very first time you write a prompt. And so they're solving the problem. Pay $4 and you can have the prompt to get you exactly what you need, or pay $2 or whatever it may be. The prices are kind of all over the place, but I thought this was super interesting and I dug a little deeper. It reminded me, first of all, that back on episode 734, I was showing you Midjourney, which is one of the kind of premier image prompts currently, where you can actually see the prompt that goes into their curated images that they're showing. I actually have Midjourney open. I have a subscription to it. And if I like a particular picture, I can actually click in and actually just copy that prompt and change it if I am so inclined. Prompt crafting for me has been a lot of prompt stealing and refining, which is kind of what they are leading you to do as they show you, you know, this full gamut of artistry that's being produced or whatever. In the article that I was reading, it actually linked to some articles from back in 2022 when this prompt craft website, sorry, promptbase.com website was launched. And one of them was about one of these people that writes these prompts. And they interviewed someone that does this as a job. And I thought it was really interesting. I'm sure it would be a lot different take if I found some articles more recent on the people that are doing this as a job. But he talks about how the different skills that he has, his like computer programming background and his artistry background kind of feed into being able to write good prompts and get good results. And just different prompts that are popular, why people are using them, things like that. One trick that he talked about was being able to give different weight to different words. I didn't know this was possible, but he says in Midjourney, if you add two colons and a number after a particular word and enclose it in quotes, that you'll get different weight on it. His example in the article is that if you use the word hot dog, for instance, and put two semicolons and a 1.5 after it, then it'll give that 50% more weight as it's designing whatever you've asked it to design. If you put a 0.5 after it, it'll cut it down to 50% of what it was going to give you. So it decreases the weight of the words. So really refined prompting, obviously, that goes into making the best images and things. And again, I'm really sharing this as my pick just because my eyes were kind of opened that this existed, that this prompt base website is out there, and I'm sure if it's out there, there's probably others like it, and that there's a whole industry around writing good prompts. So I just kind of throw that out there. Maybe some people have reactions to that. Maybe people have used prompt base or something like it. And maybe it's a way to just learn to do better prompts yourself. I mean, there's lots of different angles to the possibilities there.
That's powerful. I think this is kind of a natural evolution of kind of almost like learning another foreign language. You have to speak the language of the tool or the model that you're using. So DALL-E is going to maybe be different than Midjourney. That's going to be different than ChatGPT or OpenAI's model or Anthropic's model, Claude, whatever. So it's not that you can write out of the box, know all the nuances that are going to get you to communicate at exactly the way you want. And this kind of helps you. And if no other reason, helps you learn a little bit. I remember back in the day when we probably even shared articles on how to write good Google searches, using exclusions and what words to use and different tools that you could use right within the Google prompt. This is obviously next level. But I think there's a statement here that says you really need to put in a little bit more energy than just typing, a half sentence or two, into ChatGPT and hope for the best. I didn't realize there were these, weighting things that you could add and these models, these interfaces try and make it as simple as possible so they don't surface a lot of these things. So tools like this are super helpful. I can imagine maybe as we get into our summit next February, talking about maybe aggregating prompts and trying to figure out how we can put together a database of sorts that Wells, pastors, and teachers could use to get the results, in these different models
That's
that
a
they
great
want.
idea, Martin.
To note that.
Let's
All
write
right,
that
great
down.
pick. Very good pick. Thanks. My pick is also AI related. It's a YouTube channel called Skill Leap AI. This is just a regular old YouTuber. He's got maybe 150 or so thousand 193,000 subscribers, so he's not super big time, but I like his style, and he spends some nice time with the kind of the mainstream AI chat models. So he's spent some time with ChatGPT, Perplexity, Claude, Gemini, and just kind of goes through feature for feature. Certainly, when things come out, he'll demo them. So I found this helpful just to kind of stay up to date. So I subscribe to his channel and dip in every once in a while to see what's new in some of these models. He doesn't go into some of the real niche ones, but he stays kind of the mainstream stuff, like the chat GPTs, as I mentioned. But I think that's useful because it kind of lets you know what these tools do and kind of talks through some of the prompts, like you were talking about, Sally, that get you the best results. So like when Search was came out for chat GPT or Search GPT, I think they call it. He did a nice demo of that real recently on what that means and why you might be interested in that. He's talked about Apple Intelligence and some of those things as well. So I think if you're interested in the AI landscape, he's just kind of an approachable guy, and he takes a common sense way of sharing what he's seeing in these chat bots and how they might be helpful, not for a specific industry, but kind of from a tooling perspective. So again, that is Skill Leap AI. It's a YouTube channel, and I think he's got if you go to his site, I think he has some paid for resources, but what he some AI courses, but what he provides on the YouTube channel is a nice start and a good introduction to these AI models. So, and it'd be my pick of the week.
That's interesting. One of its recent videos is called Real-Time AI Clones Are Here, and they're mind-blowing. And it looks like he has a Zoom call with his AI clone. I might have to watch that because
That's weird. Yes, I didn't
that's
watch that one yet.
yeah, something
That's
new I
great.
hadn't heard about for sure.
All right, so those are our picks of the week. Let's move on to community news and feedback.
Sure. A couple of mentions from our friends over at Wells Intersections Facebook group that you can join, where they have interesting discussions around technology and ministry. This one was a link to Tear Down the Wall of Disconnection, Breakthrough to Your Congregation with These Five Texts. So it's a focus on congregation communication. It's under the Carrie Newhoff blog. So we've talked about Carrie before on the show. And it also has to do with glue, which is perhaps connected to Carrie. I don't know, because it talks about glue on this page as well. Anyway, the power of texting to keep people engaged is kind of the focus, and it includes five texts to help church members grow in their faith. Over on Wells Intersections, Pastor Adaman, who often comments and shares these kind of articles, mentioned that it doesn't have to be texting. It could be five emails that you use to connect your congregation as well. But one is daily scripture or prayer prompt. Take a moment to reflect. Let the truth guide your day. Encouragement to show love on social media. Think twice before you comment. Show grace. Gratitude reminder. Don't forget to give thanks. What are you grateful for today? Volunteer opportunities. Call to action. And then finally, sermon devotionals. Extend the Sunday. A quick devotional from the Sunday or whatever. So they're talking about keeping people's faith in the forefront and using these very short text, which, I'm real open to text and I pay attention to them when they come in, but I like it that they're short and I can absorb it quickly and stuff. So maybe that is a great channel for connecting your members. Of course, Glue, Gloo, offers free texting. And we've talked about that recently from Pastor Dan Sprain. He wrote up an amazing overview of his experience with the Glue free texting for congregation resource ability that they offer. So if you'd like to see that, we can include a link back to that document from Pastor Sprain in the show notes today as well.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. And then also from Wells Intersections, this one's just a discussion that's out there, so you have to be part of the group to actually see it. But I thought it was worth mentioning and kind of getting you guys thinking a little bit, hopefully. It's from our friend Philip Wells, who's been on the show before, always involved in interesting conversations. And he is involved in streaming at his congregation. He actually has a picture of their streaming setup, which is quite extensive. And he says he wants to encourage people that are doing this job to occasionally take time to be on the other side of the stream. It doesn't have to be every week, but find time to watch back the live stream from home using your TV or laptop. Try to mimic how your viewers are watching. And so you don't always know about the viewer experience. So sometimes if it's a big glitch and you have no audio on your live stream or whatever it may be, you'll hear about that. But the small nuances, the things that might be bothersome to some, but don't necessarily get reported back to you, you don't realize until you take the time to watch it back yourself. So you notice things that you can tweak or improve in your stream. And there was different feedback, a lot of discussion around the closed captioning and whether or not to use automatic closed captioning and things. Philip also shared that in his congregation, they do share the hymn text on the screen. But rather than it just being a solid screen of hymn text, he has some video in the background, subtly, of the congregation as they're singing the hymn. So you're not disconnected from the congregation just because you're singing a hymn. So I thought that was a really great tip, and one that you wouldn't really realize until you're sitting there thinking, well, this is kind of boring to just see the text, and having the congregation there makes you feel a little bit more included. So just some good food for thought and ideas around streaming. So those of you that are streaming out there, maybe you want to take some time to watch your stream.
Very nice. Sally, it's probably at that point in the show where we should remind our listeners how they can contribute to the show. And we sometimes forage around for materials, but the best way for us to receive this kind of content for this segment of the show is to go to our show notes page. And you can see all our social places where we frequent up at the top. You can leave a voicemail there. That show notes page is wellstech.wells.net. And then we also have email as well, wellstech@wells.net. We'll get to both of us, and we would love to get some feedback, both feedback on the show or for future shows, for interviews, for tools, how you're using AI maybe. All those are most welcome. So take advantage of that. I think that is going to do it this week, Sally. Good show. But it was great to have Dr. James on. It's kind of neat to always hear an outside voice, and especially one that's kind of plumbed the depths of a topic that we, either of us, don't really have the time that to do that on all these different tech topics. So we'd love to have those interviews.
Yep. And next week we'll have some, or next show, we'll have some more great voices joining us. Rachel and Jason are back. We're going to talk about education technology for elementary integration. So should be a good one.
Bet there's AI in that conversation too.
All right. There will be.
Thanks everybody for joining us. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.